ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome into the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi there, golfers. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with Scott Marsh. Scott, how you doing today?
Doing great, Frank. How are you?
You know, I'm doing fine. Now, golf it's been a great week for golf for me, so I'm feeling pretty good about my game and about golf in Northern California, and excited to welcome the guests that we have today on the show as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about the guests, but we have to talk about your golf experience over the weekend, because you played one of the most difficult courses to get on in the country, in the world, and one of the great courses there is in Cypress Point.
I did have a wonderful opportunity through a member to play the golf course, and it was kind of right in the middle of the rain that we had here in Sacramento, and it was great because we got through about 16 holes of just very pleasant weather, and on 17 it said, well, you probably shouldn't be here anyway, so let's dump on you. A little wet. It's they call it the greatest walk in golf, and it's hard to argue that, Scott. You walk down that first fairway, and you think of Hogan and Nicklaus and Sarazen and Palmer and, you know, Billy Casper and all the names that played there over the years, and the presidents, and you feel like you're walking on hallowed ground when you're there.
Well, you definitely are. And I would say maybe next to Augusta National, it's the most exclusive place to play. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would. Yes. I mean, it's definitely, it's not a municipal golf course. Let's put it that way, I suppose. And to have the opportunity to play it is a real honor and a treat. You know, and then to go into the pro shop and buy yourself a Cypress Point shirt, or, you know, a flag that, you know, I've been able to meet some great people in golf over the years. And I thought, yeah, Cypress Point flag, that's a good thing to put their signatures on.
So that's definitely worth having. Now, us mere mortals have played on the Monterey Peninsula and, you know, Pebble Beach or Spyglass or Spanish Bay. I'm just curious, how does Cypress Point compare, let's say, to Pebble and then maybe Spyglass and some of those other courses there?
Well, you know, Pebble Beach certainly has the glitz and the glamour and, you know, and all of the publicity over the years. I mean, I think that at Cypress Point, they're very understated. They've just redone part of the clubhouse, and it's very nice, but again, it's understated. It's just not a, you know, come look at us flashy place like Augusta National would be, or like Pebble Beach. It's golf, you know, that's basically what it is. It's golf. And you walk the golf course, you don't take a cart, and you take a caddy, and the caddy will let you know where you should be hitting it and why you should be hitting it there and where this putt needs to go. And you look at it and you go, really? I mean, you want me to aim 3 feet left of the hole? And sure enough, that putt's going to come right back down to it. It's pretty exciting. You know, you talk about mere mortals. The day before, you know, the poor man's Pebble Beach, I had an opportunity to play at Pacific Grove. And I think Pacific Grove is, you know, all in for the money and everything, just one of the greatest values anywhere in the world. And the front nine there, you know, kind of goes through the housing area. And as you come to number 10, you find yourself at the ocean, and the final nine holes are views of the ocean, and it's just, it's spectacular. And it's a municipal golf course. And I think it was years ago when they were granted access to build the golf course there, it was with the notion that it would always remain a public golf course. And it has for years. And if you haven't played Pacific Grove, and I know you have, but you know, for listeners that have not played it, that's a treat, and it's one that very well should be played by everybody,
and very affordable too. You can go down and have a Monterey Beach experience at a municipal price. It's absolutely fabulous. You're right; that back nine is incredible with the views, and you know, I kind of compare it almost to a Morro Bay, which is down near Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and calling it a poor man's Pebble Beach.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something, the grill there is really, really very good. They have great food. We had lunch before we played, and it just made for a great day.
Yeah, well, you had a great 48 hours. What an incredible trip.
It really was something, you know, it's pretty hard not to play there and enjoy yourself, no matter how bad your golf is. But my golf actually was pretty good both days. So, you know, all in all, I just kind of came out a winner. So,
well, when you're on courses like that, and especially at Cypress, you want to play your very best. And I'm just happy that you had a great round there.
It was great. You know, it's golf, you know, and for people that have not played golf and don't understand the attraction and the relationships and you and I have played on many courses and you know, some days we play well and some days we play badly, but we're always relating, you know, we're always having fun. We're always kind of, you know, whether it's trash talking each other or supporting each other, it's just an experience that is really hard to describe. And that's the part that if you haven't played, you just don't know about. So, when we bring these guests on the show that have been involved in the world of golf a long time, they know it, they understand it, and they feel it as well. And it kind of runs, it's a thread that runs through every golfer.
No question. Golf is a shared experience. I mean, you play with a foursome, and the stories and the time that you're with everybody, that's what you remember ultimately.
Today's show, we have Tom Morton, Director of Instruction at Hagen Oaks. And every time Tom is on the show, I learn something from him. He was an instructor that kind of has a way of describing what you should be doing in a way that people can understand it without him actually putting a hand on your club. He'll have some great things to say. Jacques Lovall is the chairman of the Lovall Foundation, and I've been fortunate enough to be invited to their golf tournament probably for the last 12 or 14 years. And it's one of the most remarkable golf tournaments I've ever played in, because it's all volunteer driven. And the organization has raised almost $7 million over the life of their foundation, all in support of children and helping children reach their potential. Courtney Foster is the general manager of Bidwell Park Golf Course in Chico, and that's a golf course I've never played. And have you played it?
No, I haven't. I'm certainly looking forward to hearing all about it.
Yeah. And, you know, it just is another reflection of the different kinds of golf we have in Northern California. I mean, I just talked about, you know, two really great courses and now we're going to learn about another one. And Northern California is just rich with golf courses. And I think in many ways we can be spoiled by what we have right at our doorstep. And, you know, I always think about someone living in the Midwest in the middle of a snowstorm and watching the AT&T when the sun is shining on Pebble Beach in February and thinking, I need to be in California to play golf.
Yeah, or this week, because the senior tournament's at Pebble Beach this weekend too.
Yeah, the Pure Insurance Championship, and we've got six first tee juniors from right here at the first tee Greater Sacramento chapter, and I wish I'd had their names and we could have announced it, but they'll be down there and have the time of their lives.
That'll be awesome.
Another great show I think we have in store. So why don't you stay with us here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. We will be back with Tom Morton right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa. Scott Marr sitting beside me as we do weekly here on Sactown Sports 1140. And the Golf to Go Radio Hour is designed you know, to help you have more fun with the game. I mean, I think we keep forgetting that golf is a game And it's supposed to be fun. It's frustrating. Scott, I know sometimes on the golf course, we look at each other and wonder why we're doing this until we hit the next shot. And then we remember why we're doing it. It's fun. Let's make sure we have some fun out there. And I think to help us today, Tom Morton, Director of Instruction for Morton Golf and the Hagen Oaks Golf Complex is back, because Tommy's a guy that that knows how to play the game, but he also knows how to help people enjoy the game. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We always learn something when you're around. Scott and I were talking. I think that one of the benefits of this show for the listener, whether you're a casual player or one that's really into the game, I think we all, find ourselves, maybe losing the grip that we thought worked for a while, and the hand slip on the club, or we find ourselves leaving the club face open, or whatever it is. And the game tends to come and go depending on how how body memory, I guess, works. So I just kind of want to go over a few things and put some thoughts in people's heads. I think that let's start with range time. I think we tend to use the driving range before we're going to play. Let's go out there and hit a bucket of balls and maybe warm up. And the notion of whatever warm up means can be, I suppose, a lot of things to a lot of people. It can be just stretching the muscles. It can be trying to find a swing. It can be anything. But how should we actually approach that range time, and what's the benefit of it?
Yes, I mean, as you were just referring to, ultimately we are human beings. We wake up every day feeling different, right? And I know certainly as I'm approaching 50 years old in the distance here, I certainly wake up feeling a little different every day. And sometimes your body works better one day than the next. And so because of that, really, if you're going to the driving range to get ready to play, that certainly should look a little different than if you're going to practice. But if we're going to play, it's really about certainly warming up the body, but also finding out kind of where our body is for the day, and searching for, maybe somebody's been working on something in their swing and there's maybe one or two swing feels or cues that work. Well, then it's about being on the range, finding which one really is getting more locked in than the other one. And because when you tee off, you cannot play golf or very good golf with technique 100% on the brain. You have to kind of just develop a feel of what we want to do for the day. And a lot of it is finding that nice tempo and timing and balance and some of those things that you really can take to the course and be successful with.
Talk to me about the mental game. We hear so much about the mental game, and I heard something once, if you think you're trying to get in the zone and you're concentrating, you're probably just creating tension in your body if you don't know what it is you're looking for. I've in all the years I've played, I felt like I was in the moment, just a handful of times. What does that mean? And how can you help us get there?
It really is about processes. And that's a great thing to be working on, is the processes that we use to sort of be in the moment and do the same thing every time, right? I mean, we can think about all these other sports, take the Kings at the free throw line, right? If you watch, they all have their own little individual moves they're making. But if you set a stopwatch to them, they're going to release the ball in the same amount of time every time. And if they're not, they're highly likely to miss the shot. And so people at the range, they're always working on, a swing thing, a mechanical thing. Well, most people should also be filtering in and working on their processes of their pre-shot routine. And how long does it take them to actually, from the start of kind of hopefully starting from behind the ball to the time they actually hit the shot, how long is it? And the best players in the world typically are kind of that 5, 6 to maybe 8, 9 second range. A lot of golfers will see maybe you're standing over it for 12, 15, 20 seconds, and they're just creating more problems than they should be at that point.
Tell me about the shots around the green. What's the difference between a pitch and a chip? I think we use the terms interchangeably.
Yeah, I think chipping is the term that really gets widely overused more than any. I think the difference that we talk to golfers a lot about is typically a chip is one maybe where it's less than the air, spends a little more time on the ground and rolling and might be a little bit closer to the green, whereas a pitch is something you're going to throw up into the air, maybe when you get back into 20, 30, 40, 50 yards, perhaps.
And it seems to me one of the biggest issues with that particular shot is people chunking it, is people hitting behind that shot and the ball going about a foot and a half and staying in the rough or wherever it was. What should we be thinking about and what's most important in order to complete that shot?
Yeah, and that's what I'm about to say also could apply to the full swing, but it really applies here is people need to really be good at knowing where the bottom of their swing is, and that's where the club lands. And so really training yourself to have a consistent swing bottom and the club landing in a similar place each time. You know, the face might be a hair open or closed, which might move direction, but, you know, the average golfer, if they can hit it solid most of the time from around the green and get it on the green, they're going to save a lot of strokes. And so a great drill to do that is, I mean, literally, if you just like, if you're out in a fairway practicing or even on a mat and you kind of put something down that's, you know, maybe like the, if you have your golf cart nearby, putting a little of the sand that you might fill a divot with in a straight line. And can you each time in your practice swing land the club on that line over and over and over again? And a lot of that is making sure that you're, you know, you're balanced in your feet and you have maybe a little less movement going on in your feet and in your, you know, pivot and stuff on a short game shot. So, you know, the biggest difference, there's power golf and there's finesse golf, and the two things are a little bit different.
Scott, I'd take, I'm the finesse golfer, you're the power golfer. So what's on your mind?
I don't know about that per se, but Tom, two things. And yes, because the two clubs you're going to use the most are your driver and your putter out there on the round. So let's start with the power game with the driver. When you step up there, you know, in terms of just the thought process, my thought process is, usually speaking, I'm trying to hit it as far as I can if I'm pulling out my driver, and I'll just not worry about whether I'm fading or slicing. But what do you recommend for a golfer who's trying to become a good driver of the ball?
Yeah, so in the game, you know, if we're talking about both distance and direction, again, the club face really controls everything. One, hitting at center of the face is going to get people a lot more distance. You know, someone has more speed than the other, but they don't hit it in the center, they're really minimizing that opportunity to hit it out there, but also the, you know, open and closed nature of the club face. And so I think all too often people get caught up too much in their, you know, their arms and hands or body and whatnot, as opposed to really feeling like they're holding a club and how does, you know, how do what we do influence what the head of the club does? And if they want to create speed, well, it's about creating speed in the club head, right? Club head speed is the most important. You'll see a lot of people that sometimes we joke about that, you know, some people have effortless power, but there's a lot of people that have powerless effort. Mm-hmm. And those people are the ones that, you know, you see them just, you know, moving their body a ton and it's going, you know, a ton side to side, forward, backwards, and it looks like they're making lots of effort, but the club isn't efficiently moving because of it. So really learning to move the club head in space, doing drills where you flip the club over and hold it just below the head and make swings where you can hear the shaft really swishing in the air. And the louder you can make that and the louder you can make it right at the bottom of the swing, the better off. And just training to do that, I think, would help people a lot.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, being at the Fortinet tournament last week and watching Ricky Fowler outdrive everybody else on the course by 30 yards. And here he is, you know, maybe 160, 165 pounds. I mean, that speaks right to your point.
Yep. And, you know, those players just, they move the club so efficiently. But the other thing that golfers should feel good about is, you know, while you're out there, there's swings, tons of swings that look so much different from each other. But they have a lot of things in common in regard to, you know, they are swinging the club and they're squaring the face and they're doing it efficiently. And so, you know, you don't have to have the same looking swing as everyone, but you need to learn how to, for our own self, move the club efficiently in space.
Yeah, there's obviously some tenets there that should apply regardless of what the swing looks like. If we're talking about putting, is it truly pretty much anything goes that you feel comfortable with, or does the same rule apply for your putter as it would for your driver?
I think there's some similarities in regard to what we were talking about. I mean, there again, there is. If you look out there, there's so many different ways people are holding the putter, setting up the putter, and so on and so forth. But the one thing that has to happen is that putter face has to square up to the ball on your intended target line, and you need to be really good with your speed control. And I would say for the average golfer, that is the number one thing we see, is that the average golfer is very poor with their speed control, which is the thing that leads to putts. You know, they're so focused on a line or hitting it toward the target, well, they leave it 8 feet short. Well, then if you look at the stats on tour, the making an 8 foot putt goes way down compared to if you could get it 2 feet. So, you know, really working on speed control, which nobody does, would be a benefit.
Yeah, and you mentioned like free throw line, you know, so for basketball players, I mean, they're just working on repetition, and obviously how many dribbles they take and the routine and the habit. But I mean, that is 15 feet. It's indoors, and it's the same in every arena, whether you go junior high, college, or NBA. When you're putting, every green is different, every slope is different, every pace and speed is different. So how do you calibrate for something, for, you know, somebody who's trying to work on their putting, knowing that the circumstances they're facing are going to be entirely different every day?
Well, most people, if you like stood 6 feet apart from each other and one person had a golf ball and you tossed it to the other person and then you moved back a couple of feet and tossed it and you kind of kept moving back and back and back, most people are pretty good at actually getting that distance correct. Like, they don't leave it 6 feet short or 10 feet over your head. They're pretty good at it. Well, that skill resides in the frontal cortex of our brain. So most people already have the skill set. They just sort of push it aside and check it out when they go putting, instead of like enacting it, knowing that we have this skill. And again, just working on it. You know, like I said, a great drill for people is if you stand in the middle of a practice green and you sort of putt to the fringe to your left, which might be 10 feet, and then maybe you go straight ahead, which might be 20 feet, and then maybe over the other way is 15 feet, and it's different distances, and you just practice putting as close as you can to the fringe without rolling onto it, and just work on distance control and becoming really good at it. And of course, some greens are a little faster and slower, but again, you should be able to sort of make some minor adjustments depending on, you know, if you get to the level of being pretty good there, which anyone can. And that's the thing, especially with putting, unlike driving the ball, and let's be real, none of us speaking at the moment are going to be hitting at 320 to 330 anytime soon like the best players in the world. However, we can become great putters and be really good at distance control just like they are.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize we were going to get, you know, into the good stuff, frontal cortex. Now my mind is really spinning. Tommy, so often I'll play with people and, you know, people leave the club on the edge of the green while we go putt, and I'll pick up their clubs and the grips are just shiny and slick. And I mentioned to them that, you know, they're probably hanging onto the club too tightly and all kinds of things which are messing up their swing in addition to having a hard time holding on. How often should people be changing grips and what is the benefit of new grips?
Yeah, well, again, to your point, it's the only connectivity we have to the golf club, right? So the handle, the golf club, and the grip are super important. Not only the type of grip we have on it, but certainly how we grip the club clearly is very important. And so I would say the average golfer that plays, you know, a decent amount of rounds, I'm not even speaking to those who play, you know, a ton of rounds, but a decent amount should replace their grips once a year at least. And because they do, they become worn. And then also, if you look at someone's set, typically, if they practice a little bit, everyone, you can tell what their favorite clubs are, because maybe the driver and the 7-iron and the sand wedge are almost falling off their clubs while the 5-iron looks brand new still, right? So kind of making sure that we're using all the clubs and kind of getting the grips to be worn fairly evenly would be smart as well. But yeah, I would say for sure once a year. If you play a lot of golf, twice a year isn't probably out of the realm.
I always learn something talking to you, Tom, and I appreciate your time being with us here on the show. Tom is available. He's the director of instruction at Hagen Oaks, and you know, certainly for lessons and but even for advice. You know, if you stop by and you catch him and want to talk about your game or questions you have, I'm sure if he has the time, he'll be able to do that. Tom, appreciate you being with us as always. We learned something. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Anytime. I appreciate being at.
All right. That's Tom Morton, Director of Instruction at Hagen Oaks. This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour, and we will be back with Jacques Lovell, Chairman of the Lovell Foundation, right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour here on Sacktown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa, welcoming in Mr. Jacques Lovell. Jacques is chairman of the Lovell Foundation and president of UFCW Golden State. But Jacques is here to talk about a very, very special golf tournament that his organization has been putting on for years. And it's called The Challenge. And indeed, they've met the challenge and have surpassed it. Jacques, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be back.
You know, you have been, your organization has been so gracious to me over the years, inviting me to your tournament. And I've had an opportunity to kind of get to know some of the players involved. And I've always found your story fascinating and the amount of money you've raised. And so let's kind of start at the beginning. I think it's a real interesting story how this Lovell Foundation all kind of came to be.
Well, Frank, it goes back now, believe it or not, 25 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And the way it started was simple enough. There was a collection taken among the staff of our organization for my father and my mother for a Christmas gift. And it was about $1,000. And so my wife and I were charged with going out and finding him a gift. And, you know, the more we dug into it, the more we finally determined that, you know, they kind of had all the material stuff. And we thought because of the history of how they really raised their family, that we had an idea to start a charity in their name to benefit kids. Their home was always, they had seven kids of their own for starters, and their house was always a bit of a community center. And the kids were really welcome at our home. The door was always open and the kitchen was always open. And they, my father used to joke, he'd come home at night and he'd just kiss every kid on the cheek in bed, no telling who they were. I mean, it was, they just had huge hearts and really, love kids. So we started a foundation in their name. My father's name was Jack. We lost him 2 years ago, and my mother's name is Patricia. So Jack and Patricia, we started a foundation called the Lovell Foundation for Children in their name. And that was, believe it or not, back in 1997.
That's remarkable. And obviously you decided $1,000 wasn't going to quite do it. So you set about to do some fundraising, and at some point in the process decided that a golf tournament might be a good thing to do. And how long has the challenge been going on? And
the first challenge was in 1999. Yeah, it took a couple of years for us to kind of get our act together as an organization and figure out, you know, exactly what we were going to do. But once we declared we were going to start a foundation, people really came out of the woodwork in a positive way. That you know, we had people volunteer their accounting services, their legal services, their communication services. It was really, really amazing. And we finally decided that in order to do a fundraiser, we decided to go with golf. First of all, Jack was an avid golfer. I mean, beyond avid, and it just seemed like the appropriate way to do it. Had a lot of folks that support us were golfers, and it just was seemed like the natural thing to do. So we started the challenge in '99. First few years we were in Rancho Marietta, which is Frank Deiniger's home course. Our mutual friend Frank Deiniger is our tournament director. And, you know, Frank, he's just an extraordinary man. He's been our director for 20 years of the tournament. And, you know, he runs it like a Swiss watch runs, you know, so it's just great to have him involved. So we started Rancho Marietta. Then after a couple of years there, we moved to Granite Bay. We did 20 years at Granite Bay. And the last year we went up to, the Ridge in Auburn, and we're going back to the Ridge in Auburn actually again this year.
You know, you mentioned Frank Daniger, who is certainly one of the stars in the organization, but he's really representative of the kinds of people that kind of jump in and want to help in any way they can. You have supporters that come from all walks of life, and this organization certainly depends on volunteer help, and boy, they come out in droves.
Well, that's one of the things that we're really proud of, is it is a complete volunteer organization. We don't have any paid staff. So all the money we raise beyond the cost of the events that we do goes directly to beneficiaries. And so we're really proud of that piece. And as you said, we have a lot of folks come from various walks of life to support us. I can tell you, the financial services industry has been huge in terms of helping us out financially. The healthcare services providers are also really, really big supporters of us. And then various labor organizations, the building trades, the Teamsters, other UFCW locals, it's really been an all hands on deck experience, and they've just been remarkably generous with their economics and with their time. It's really I can't express my gratitude enough for the support of the community out there.
You know, the mission statement of your foundation is helping children reach their full potential. And that's a pretty lofty goal. And in order to reach that goal, it certainly takes an awful lot of financial support, which you certainly referred to there. But I think the success of your tournament, based on the kinds of folks that you're talking about supporting you, and everyday folks just kind of stepping up and wanting to be involved. Talk about the success of your tournament over the years.
Well, to this day, I'm stunned. Like we said, we started with $1,000 seed money, and this year we're surpassing $7 million that we've raised.
That's remarkable.
It is really phenomenal. And that doesn't really encompass the scope of the impact because of just the sheer amount of volunteerism involved as well. But the money's been substantial. It's allowed us to do an awful lot of things. I can barely begin to list it. We've got, two or three full pages of various entities and individuals that we've been able to help throughout the years. It's really a rewarding experience, I think, for everybody involved. You just see, it really does bring out the best in people. And we've been able to help a lot of folks who otherwise would get, lost in the shuffle and fall through the cracks. I always say, kids that have challenges don't have marketing departments. So people have to, kind of identify them. And I can tell you, school teachers are a remarkable source for identifying some kids that could use a hand. Really, I can say all of our volunteers keep an eye out, and they just bring us individual cases, whether it be an individual child or a family with kids that needs help. And it's really I can tell you without any reservation, there's never been an instance where people have come to us saying that they like to give somebody a hand where we haven't been able to do it. We've always had the capacity to step in and help. And that's really, it's incredibly gratifying.
We're talking with Jacques Lovell, the chairman of the Lovell Foundation, and their tournament, their highly successful golf tournament, the Challenge, is coming up pretty soon. Here at the Ridge. Jacques, you talk about children, and everybody's heart immediately goes out. But when you're talking about support, you're running the full gamut. I mean, it could be education, it could be healthcare, it could be housing. You've done some pretty incredible things.
Well, like I say, it's really any circumstance where something's come up where a kid, you know, a child's in need, and we've just been able to step in, and it has run the gamut, and it continues to run the gamut, whether it be special needs kids or kids that have experienced abuse or neglect, certainly where they're in economic strife. We've supported a number of different organizations that help children that have hearing impairments. We've been supporting a group with from the very beginning of where we have counseling set up for various children and adults parents who've find it you know, challenging and have had their own challenges. We've stepped in there. We have supported the Sunburst Institute, which supports kids who have were born and live with HIV. We've had, I just tell you, Frank, the list goes, really does go on and on. And you can't really think of a situation where we haven't had some involvement within the community. And like I said, we support many, and there are a lot of great organizations, and particularly in the Sacramento area, that are helping out kids. So you know, we've supported individual organizations, but and we do regularly every year support various organizations, but what we really think our sweet spot is stepping in where they've fell through the cracks. That's really what we feel is what makes us different. And that is that we're not necessarily, we don't like our finances getting tied up in too much administration. We like getting directly to the heart of who we're trying to help.
I think one of the most fascinating parts of this whole story, and I think of interest to our listeners, is that, you know, you started off very humbly. I mean, you had $1,000 to start this thing. And you know, the notion that, you know, people listening thinking, gee, I'd really love to support, you know, such and such, or this is my passion, but gee, I don't have a whole lot of money. Well, you didn't have a whole lot of money either, and you're an incredible success story. So, you know, I guess we use the name of your tournament and challenge them to go out and do the same thing.
I wholeheartedly challenge people to accept the challenge, for sure. It is a look, if you have good intentions and you you lead with your heart, it's incredible what people are willing to do for you. And I just can't express how much gratitude we have for the way people have supported us over the years.
Well, it goes both ways. Jacques, appreciate your time, spending some time with us. And I know you've got a full plate and you've got a tournament coming up next week. So thanks so much for being with us, Jacques Lovell, with the Lovell Foundation and the challenge coming up next week. Continued success.
Well, thank you, Frank. And just for the record, we continue to see you as a critical member of the team. So we appreciate everything you do. Thank you.
This is the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back for more right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
You're listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour on Sactown Sports 1140. Courtney is the general manager of Bidwell Park Golf Course in Chico, California. Courtney, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
You know, we were speaking earlier, and you've got some history here in Sacramento, both at Mather and at Ansel Hoffman Golf Courses. So you're not a rookie up there at Bidwell Park. You put your time in.
Yeah, I've been here 11 years here at Bidwell. And so we've made some changes here since I've been here, and the golf course is great.
You know, I don't know that I've ever played Bidwell Park. Scott, have you?
I don't believe I have either, unfortunately.
You know, as I look at photos online, I suppose I'm reminded a bit of, you know, of Hagen Oaks, of Ansel Hoffman, of Tree Line Golf Courses. Am I right, Courtney?
Yeah, you're very, very similar to, say, Ansel Hoffman. Narrower golf course is not a long golf course by any means, but it's lined with the native oak trees all around the golf course.
So how long has the course been open, and how much play are you getting? I'm guessing you, like everyone else, the pandemic has been great for the golf course up there.
We actually celebrated 100 years this year. 100 years was in 2020, but because of COVID, we put off our celebration. But in June, we had our 100-year celebration of the golf course. The last few years with COVID has created a buzz, obviously, throughout the golf industry. We're extremely busy. We haven't slowed down yet. We are still slightly ahead of 2021 numbers for this year. So we didn't think we would be that in that situation right now. We expected to see a little bit downward motion, but hasn't happened yet. Even with the heat of the summer that we had, we stayed busy. So it's been very good for us. You know, the extra rounds. We did 58,000 rounds last year, on pace with the same number for this year. So, which is a good number.
Yeah, that's great. I'm always fascinated by courses that are 100 years old because, you know, to find out that they were built where really nothing else probably was at the time, and then kind of, the cities moved in around the golf courses. Was that the same case there?
Pretty much they moved out to the golf course because Bidwell Park is tucked into Upper Bidwell Park and the foothills of Chico. It's tucked up and away. And so town has actually moved towards the park, towards the upper park. And so there's no homes around the golf course here. There's Bidwell, Chico Creek runs right along and through the golf course here. The other side of the creek on the front side, there's some homes, but not visible from the golf course.
Scott, you know, Courtney mentioned tree line narrow fairways. That sounds like your game right there, huh?
Sounds like a total recipe for disaster to me. How do you keep the course? Obviously, the trees are a good defense because you mentioned that the length of the course from the tips is just over 6,300 yards. And obviously, 100 years ago, the course was built different than with today's specifications.
Correct. And it's surprising for us, the yardage. You know, people think it's an easy golf course to take on. Small greens. We just finished our 95th annual Chico City Championship, which is a match play event, which is the second longest running match play in California. And I always think the players are going to tear this up and really shoot some low scores. But of the qualifier of 60 players, we only had about six that actually broke 70, broke par. So it's challenging because the greens are small and it's tree lined. So you just can't go at everything.
Yeah. And Bermuda fairways and Poa greens, correct?
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
That's an interesting combination.
It is. You find that up in Northern California a little bit, but we've managed to stay in really good shape this year. Our greens are the best in the area right now until Monday, when we do our annual verification, as many do. But I have a great superintendent in Sean Ortega, does a fabulous job for me, and he's kept this golf course in great shape all year. It's probably the best it's ever been in. But it presents some challenges, antiquated irrigation systems, those things, but it's in great shape and fun to play.
Yeah, it looks like a tremendous course. I can't wait to get up there. I'm just curious, over the last few years, especially where you're at with all the fires and the heat waves that we've had and everything, you talk about your superintendent, but just curious about the challenge, particularly in the last few years with everything we've dealt with here in California.
It has been a challenge. Unfortunately, you know, those fires, the smoke, everything, we had Paradise, which is right next door to us, burn a few years ago. That was the big devastating one for everybody in this area. The smokes always create a challenge. Last year with the fires and the year before, that smoke got to be pretty tough around here. So there were days we had to shut down because the smoke was heavy or the air quality was just poor. So, but we've managed through it in just looking forward to what the rest of the year brings us. But there are some challenges here. We've had fires come right down to the edge of the golf course and have been very, very lucky there.
So give me the, you know, the GM's tip. I'm standing on the first tee. How am I not going to embarrass myself throughout my round? What do I need to do?
Well, we have 150-yard barber poles on every hole. Mm-hmm. And there are areas that look like you can cut corners and those type of things, but it's not what you want to do. So those barber poles are a directional aid for the golfer as well. So you stand on the first tee, you look like you can hit driver over the corner. Some can, but the best way to play it is to follow the barber poles and around this golf course. Like I said, it's not a long golf course. So the first tee, as many like to hit driver, it's not really the golf club to hit. So hitting a fairway wood or a hybrid off the tee to the 150 pole really sets you up well. So
great advice. So many people are conditioned to, you know, wanting to hit driver as far as they can on every hole and then see what happens from there. But, you know, like many courses that are designed, you know, with an aiming device or 150-yard wider fairway, you kind of aim for a spot where your second shot's going to be a little bit easier to make. Yeah. Tell me about your lessons. I know Janelle Rogge is up there, and I've known Janelle for a while through PGA functions, but how's your lesson program?
Our lesson program has taken a step back. Janelle has left us. Her husband, Kyle, took the head golf pro position a year ago at Riverview Country Club in Redding. So Janelle's been teaching up there. Oh. She'll come down and do some clinics for me a little bit.
Okay.
Our lesson program was really, really strong when Janelle was here. She was with me for 8 years, fabulous instructor and person herself. And so we're in that rebuilding stage of our lesson program. And for a golf course, which we don't have a driving range, we have a teaching and fitting center, which is about 4 or 5 people wide and 150 yards by about 30 yards wide. We don't have the room for a full range. They took it out in 92 when they realigned the golf course.
Yeah.
And so we do quite well when our programs are strong, the teaching programs. We have the private lessons going, group lessons going. I have one other golf professional besides myself here who teaches. And then our putting green and our practice short game facility is really nice. I have a pretty large area where people can chip and pitch in a bunker play and practice their putting.
Well, you know, everything you describe about the golf course, it suggests it's worth a drive from here in Sacramento to get up to Chico and give it a try, especially in the fall when I think golf courses really have a kind of a different personality. Courtney, how do we make tee times?
Our tee times are made at golfbidwellpark.com on our website is the easiest way. They can always call the pro shop, 530-891-8417. We are also accessible through teeoff.com and Golf Now. But our website is probably the easiest.
All right. That's Courtney Foster, General Manager of Bidwell Park Golf Course. Another one of the great places to play in Northern California. Courtney, thanks much for being with us on Golf to Go.
Appreciate it.
Thanks very much to Courtney Foster and all our guests today on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Back next week at the same time, same station. For Scott Marsh, I'm Frank LaRosa. Thanks for being with us. Keep it in the fairway.